Ladies and gentlemen, I've got the great pleasure of introducing Dr. Alan Gibbs, who is a lecturer in Southampton and has done his PhD and a master's in the European University Institute in Florence. He's also an expert in constitutional theory of the European Union, and I'm very much looking forward to his talk today.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for inviting me to give this this seminar stroke lecture. Hope to keep to the 30 minutes and promptly, so I'll begin. This lecture really is intended to be a defense or a statement about the importance of constitutional thinking for the European Union. Constitutional thinking for the European Union has been under attack, or has been, in the last few years, been questioned largely from the standpoint of new governance or administrative, transnational administrative law, or sometimes called global administrative law. And I'll come back to that challenge to constitutionalism in the course of this lecture. So it's about saying constitutionalism, constitutional thinking is important. And I might give you a health warning here, of course, that documentary constitution, which, as we know, has a history in the European Union, does not exhaust the sense in which I use constitutionalism or constitutional thought here. So thank goodness, given that we're in the UK as well. So I want to defend constitutionalism, but I also want to criticize the way in which constitutionalism is being conventionally thought about in the European Union. And I want to say that there is, if you like, a hidden or concealed problem about constitutional thought, which is concealed by the way in which we conventionally think about constitutionalism. So I'll say it again. There is a concealed or hidden element of constitutional thought, which is concealed by the way in which we conventionally think about constitutionalism. That's why I've called it the esoteric essential problem, the hidden essential problem of constitutionalism. So what I want to try and get us towards is to think about the dynamics or the elements of this essential problem, this hidden essential problem of constitutionalism. The first, to get us towards that stage, I think it's important to track back with some familiar, if you like, issues of constitutionalism in the European Union. Why does constitutionalism become an issue for the European Union? Why does it become a matter to think about with the European Union? What is the connection between the European Union and constitutionalism? Well, I think, for a start, one of the very important problems here is that one of the very important questions is that constitutional thought has been associated with the nation state or the state. So the first dilemma for constitutionalism is, if you like, moving the question, how does constitutionalism become relevant when you move beyond the state or the state form? You know, is constitutionalism tied inexorably to the tradition of the nation state or the state? Now, the answer, of course, is that constitutionalism, or it seems as though constitutionalism isn't, because there's a lot of constitutional thought about the European Union, that there is, if you like, been that transition away from a concern with the state towards something like beyond the state. But for a variety of reasons, that shift has also put in question the nature of constitutionalism itself. In other words, what happens when you move beyond the state is that constitutionalism, constitutional thought, becomes an issue in and of itself. So a lot of what we have in the European Union is, if you like, meta-discourse. Discourse about constitutionalism or constitutional thought. What is constitutionalism? And this doesn't happen in the same way at the state level. You get a lot of discussion or interest in constitutional law or constitutional practice, but you don't end up getting that same kind of concern about the meaning of constitutionalism itself. Take, for example, the UK at the moment. Now, if the UK goes through huge constitutional change, for example, the independence of Scotland, that would be fundamental constitutional change, but it wouldn't trigger what we seem to have in the European Union, which is a concern about the very nature or the thing of constitutionalism. If Scotland becomes an independent state, then it simply becomes an independent state. It wouldn't trigger the same kind of concerns about, do we understand the very sense of constitutionalism? Do we understand, it doesn't trigger that same meta debate about constitutionalism. So let's start by thinking, well, how or why, beyond the idea of just simply moving beyond the state, why has the European Union triggered this interest in constitutionalism as a kind of meta theory, what do we mean by constitutionalism kind of question? So this is where we have to begin by sort of, if you like, going over some basic points about the European Union. Now, the first way in which constitutionalism became on its own a meaning, an issue to discover on its own, or the meaning on its own, is really concerned with judicial statements about the legal order. You know, you're very familiar with Van Gendon-Loos, Costa, Simmental, Handel's Gesellschaft, and these kinds of cases. The implications of these statements was that the EC was a new legal order, and that, you know, by limiting their sovereignty, in the treaties, the nation states has endowed the EU with an autonomous sovereignty. So we get this issue about, you know, what does supremacy, what does this claim to supremacy mean, what does this new legal order mean? And added to that, of course, you're very familiar with the national judicial comments, statements from national constitutional courts about how they also interpret the notion of supremacy from these Costa and Van Gendon-Loos claims. The effect of all this, of course, is that the judicial statements seem to place in question the nature of legal order. What do we mean by legal order? And more to the point, whether the order can be autonomous or beyond the nation state. Another way of saying this is, what is the, if you like, independent authority of this new legal order of the EU? What sort of relationship does this legal order have with individuals? And attempting to answer these kinds of questions concerning the nature of those initial judicial statements, you in turn examine or have recourse to the nature of constitutionalism to answer those questions about the legal order. So the legal order, the nature of the legal order, is one way in which constitutionalism itself became an issue for the European Union. The second are concerns over legitimacy. This is a broad topic, of course, and one which relates to the idea of democratic deficit. The basis of it is that, you know, through establishing this autonomous legal order and through the cases which, as you know, establish that kind of direct legal relationship between the EU and the individual through direct effect and so on, you get a political bond between the individual and the EU legal order, a strong legal bond between the individual at the bottom, if you like, and the EU legal order through those direct effect and those other legal doctrines of that sort. But what this triggers is a concern that there isn't a sufficiently strong political bond to support or provide the foundations for that legal, that strong legal relationship that the law has created between the EU and the individual. So the concern has been about, if you like, whether the connection between the political connection between the individual and the EU. And you have a concern that that isn't a particularly strong connection. So from time to time you get the Eurobarometer type surveys showing democratic disaffection. You have the political elites of the European Union trying to ensure that democracy is enhanced either through strengthening the representative institutional functions or to develop strategies to pursue a participatory democracy. So in some ways or another, the intention is to provide a commitment to ensure that democracy or the democratic or political connections between the individual and the EU are put on a more stronger footing or a more stable, durable footing. And for that, again, constitutionalism was resorted to. And we know about the constitutional treaty in that respect. So constitutionalism, the drive towards constitutionalism was seen as part and parcel of trying to resolve the legitimacy concerns of the European Union. Thirdly, as to why constitutionalism itself became a matter for the European Union was the expansion into sensitive policy areas, which had traditionally been the preserve of state activity. Part of my work on the European Union's area of freedom, security, and justice is part of this, you know, where the notion of criminal justice is considered to be a particular preserve of what the sovereign state does. So in moving beyond economic freedoms and the completion of the internal market into these more sensitive areas like perhaps even environmental regulation, defence and foreign affairs and so on, that also triggers a constitutional question for the European Union. How can the European Union conduct or pursue these matters that seem to be the traditional preserve of the state? Or perhaps in another way or another different way of putting at it, how can the EU have a sort of constitutional safeguards for these areas like criminal justice? You know, what kind of, the state provided certain kind of safeguards for criminal justice or environmental regulation and so on and so forth. How can, if that function is being performed by the European Union, how can it have the equivalent sort of a constitutional safeguards as the member state has enjoyed, you know, or gives? So that then in turn raises, if you'd like, the question of constitutionalism, you know, that given these sensitive areas, we need to look at constitutionalism in order to provide or focus upon providing answers to that. Finally, constitutionalism becomes at issue in another kind of way, the fourth way I want to say, which is that currently you have a great deal of developments of different types of agencies and different sorts of quasi-legislative, quasi-executive practices about coordinating behaviour. And these seem to take place outside of law or traditional views of law and legislation. So you've got the open method of coordination, the OMC, and so on. And these pose a different kind of challenge to constitutionalism, because they say you're dealing here now with non-traditional, almost non-legal forms of coordination of behaviour, which requires a very different picture of what accountability or what transparency needs, and that is not fulfilled by a traditional vision of constitutionalism. In other words, in the non-traditional form of soft law and coordination of behaviour, you need a different answer, one that isn't constitutionalist. So that also, in its rejection of constitutionalism, also places the question of the meaning of constitutionalism at the EU level. In its rejection of constitutionalism, new governance or new modes of conducting law or coordinating behaviour pose that kind of challenge. What does constitutionalism mean at the European level, or does it have any future at all at the European level? So those are four ways in which the meaning of constitutionalism itself has been provoked. And I want to come back to the challenge posed by new governance later on. Now, what then has been the response of constitutionalists? What have constitutional theorists said is the relevance or the way in which constitutionalism can be thought about beyond the state at the EU level, and how can it resolve or help those challenges that the EU faces? One of the most enduring elements of this, I think, is that that constitutional theorists fall back on a very traditional understanding of constitutionalism. The most enduring element of constitutionalism is the desire to find a foundation for the political community. It is a tradition which has its origins in ancient Roman public ideas about the foundation of the city of Rome. And its equivalents can be found in constitutional theorists, constitutional foundations of the great modern revolutions in America and France. Closely linked to this idea that constitutionalism founds a political community is a second kind of heritage of constitutionalism, and that is that in some ways it organizes and retains power in such a way as to protect or underpin individual autonomy and freedom. This heritage of founding a political community, making a political community, and also limiting or restricting the and organizing the basis of power plays out in the normative discourses and legitimation discourses, if you like, surrounding republicanism and liberal constitutionalism. So the classical ways of thinking about constitutionalism. There is a tradition which looks at establishing a public philosophy or values of common goods or the participatory rights of citizens and of public deliberation. And these traditions can be found in the way, or can be traced to how the EU has taken over that constitutional legacy. So you have Ality and Ward, Andrew Williams, talking about a humanist, egalitarian, republican tradition of constitutionalism stemming from Erasmus and Leibniz and so on, which become or find a way of locating public or common goods at the European level. So looking back at the tradition of European humanist ideas, theories, to say that these are present in or can be found in the European notion of common good. So there is a search for a normative foundation to the European Union, distinctive values, principles, and rights derived from this constitutional heritage. And also there is the epistemological tradition, which is about the organization of power, the organization and, if you like, control or restraint of power. And that also, that epistemological tradition also has its legacy in the way constitutionalism is applied to the EU. Now, interestingly, the concern of, if you like, constitutionalists has been that both those traditions tend towards, if you like, a monistic account of the European Union. They tend towards a uniformity. This is the idea of James Tully, that this constitutional legacy, this normative and epistemological legacy, requires this sort of monistic view. And it's in response to this that you get constitutional pluralists. So, you know, you've had Emilios here a few weeks ago talking about constitutional pluralists. Well, they're, in a way, their response is to say that what needs to be taken into consideration is the pluralist legal orders, the plural legal orders of the European Union. But nevertheless, what you still find in constitutional pluralism is the same commitment to both normativity and epistemology, the basic hallmarks of constitutional thought, because they still, they articulate, and the, Neil Walker, as sort of the exponent of constitutional pluralism, argues that you still find that pluralism is an ethical way, or underpins the values, common values of the European Union. And also it's an epistemological theory, because it argues that, if you like, you can describe and you can locate these different legal orders, that you can identify them as distinct legal orders. So it's epistemological in that sense. So even though constitution pluralists takes the view that the monistic heritage of constitution is something problematical for the European Union, it nevertheless is still a theory that is constitutional in the sense that it has this commitment to normativity and epistemology. Now, this vision of the role of constitutional thinking for the European Union has come under considerable challenge because of new governance or, if you like, administrative law. Now, in his idea of constitutional pluralism written about 10 years ago, Neil Walker says this about global or, you know, new governance. He says, these questions concerning OMC, comitology, multi-level governance strike an important new key. Nonetheless, they remain intimately connected with a long tradition of voice-centered questions within constitutional discourse, some older, as we have seen in the rights democracy debates. So they are best considered as extending rather than eclipsing that older discourse, and indeed as requiring to be addressed simultaneously and in coordination with the more venerable questions in a manner which is itself democratically legitimate. So Neil Walker sees this new debate about new governance practices, soft law and so on, as coming inside the constitutional debate. They're part of the constitutional heritage. They're part of this seeking, you know, to organise power, or part of a kind of seen as part of or exemplifying a kind of a commitment to find common values or common a normative underpinning for the European Union. But it's apparent now that new governance cannot be so easily assimilated into this constitutional tradition. And in some respects, the advocates of new governance see that it limits them in tying their idea of new governance to constitutionalism. The tenor of the distinctive approach to new governance is quite well conveyed by Fritz Sharp, who writes, "Any discussion of legitimacy in the multi-level European polity needs to start from a functional perspective. From this functional starting point, further exploration could take either an empirical turn, focusing on citizens' behaviour and justifying their beliefs, or a normative turn, focusing on good reasons for such beliefs." The key element here is this idea of a functional perspective. If you like, this is a functional pragmatic response to the problems of governance at the post-state level, at the European level. And Nico Krisch, who's a big exponent of this new governance dimension, writes, you know, constitutional theorists are struggling to find analytical and normative instruments to come to terms with this new legal order. And so this new governance and administrative law becomes a way of looking for modest objectives here. It becomes a way of, if you like, functionally and pragmatically trying to find some ways of securing some restraints on power through accountability and transparency. So accountability and transparency sort of achieve a way of ensuring that power is held to account, held, restrained in some way. So you don't need to go through that whole thing of finding the normative basis for the European Union, the values, common values, or you don't need to find a way of describing how the new legal order. That's all that meta-theoretical stuff. That's all that meta-discussion. What new legal governance is a more pragmatic, it's a more functional thing. It says, well, we've got this problem. We've got complex legal and political practices going on, and we need to ensure that in some ways power is not abused. So it's a functional, pragmatic response to that. Practices that help ensure accountability, ensure transparency. And, you know, it's no surprise that this train of new governance takes its inspiration from American theorists or theorists of new governance. You know, Americans look at European scholars and think, why are they always wasting their time looking at meta theories? You know, let's just address the pragmatics of the problem of power in the post-state environment. So their cue, if you like, comes from that kind of American concern with functional, pragmatic means of resolving issues of power in a multi-level situation of governance and where you have, if you like, federal and state. You know, so they're very used to that problem of power being in different levels. Why not pragmatically resolve it like that? Now, I'm not interested in really criticizing new governance because I think it's understandable that faced with a problem of how do you address the issue of abuse and legitimacy of power in the European Union, that you perhaps fall back on more pragmatic considerations, that you leave those meta-theoretical issues alone. And in some ways, I'm sympathetic with that approach, and I think it's by no means problematical in a way. But what I'm interested in, or what I've begun to discover, is that when faced with this challenge of the new governance thought, constitutionalism rearticulates something. They rearticulate the importance of constitutional thought. I want to, for the brief period of time left, focus on that. And in doing so, they reveal this esoteric, this hidden issue of constitutionalism. In other words, in rearticulating the importance of constitutional thought in circumstances where it's looking like the new governance is having all the cake and eating it, if I can mix metaphors or whatever. In rearticulating the importance of constitutionalism, they actually hit on something very important about constitutionalism. And it's not about meta-theories. It's not about, meta-issues of constitutionalism. It's something much more valuable. So let me, for the short time I have left, let me try to articulate that. So we have this new governance perspective, pragmatic, functional, and that seems to challenge why even bother going to constitutionalism, why even bother looking at constitutionalism. Well, as I say, the response from those that are committed to constitutionalism, I think, is very significant or revealing in the past couple of years. Neil Walker, who I mentioned a little time ago, writes about the idea of constitutionalism being a kind of practical reasoning, a valuable practical reasoning, if you like, that the idea of the good working order of something is in terms of the interaction of different frames of governing. He calls them the legal frame, the political institutional frame, the social frame, and so on. And these different frames in which our political lives are organized need constitutionalism to, if you like, talk to each other. This practical reasoning about how these different frames of political organization interact and talk to each other. And he calls this practical reasoning of constitutionalism normative technology. That's his phrase for it. So it would seem that Walker, in articulating this five frames of constitutionalism, is re-articulating a basis of constitutionalism as the organizer, the epistemological tradition of constitutionalism, the organizer of political social life. So it's in that, and his phrase normative technology is very revealing here. It's primarily the organizer. But what I find very interesting is that he's not entirely convinced about this. And let me read you a little passage from his article that he wrote in a book called The Twilight of Constitutionalism. It says, "Much more important is what the resilience and resurgence of constitutional language, however patchy, may signify. Indeed, the holistic constitutional tradition, the central issues of regulation, present themselves in such different ways and are offered quite distinctive range of regulatory solutions. Constitutional language retains a crucial long-stop function, a kind of placeholder for certain abiding concerns we have, something of great and irreplaceable value, will have to be lost from our resources of common living. It is precisely the language of constitutionalism, considered as a normative technology, finds it ever more complex and difficult to address the problems of communal living it poses in and for the post-state world." Now, what I suggest is interesting about this passage and why it reveals a hidden problem of constitutionalism, the esoteric problem of constitutionalism, is this. What I see is in Neil Walker's work is this tension between the epistemological tradition of constitutionalism, the organizer, which is reflected in his vocabulary like placeholder, normative technology, long stop, a crucial long stop, this core organizer of our political lives. And then this other language he has, which is a sort of something else, I think. It's a sort of common living, common communal living, the common life, as if the language of constitutionalism is actually the question of our common life together. Now, what I suggest is that there's this tension then between the epistemological tradition and what he's trying to articulate, which is this importance of the question of common life. Constitutionalism reminds us that what is at stake is our common life together. That is the essence of constitutional thought, is that we keep the question of community as essential and open. So what I argue is that this epistemological heritage of constitutionalism, the organizer, which Neil Walker commits himself to, conceals that fundamental question of constitutionalism as being the question of community. Okay. Let me take a different writer, a writer that comes from not so much the epistemological tradition, but the normative tradition of constitutionalism. That is to say, finding the common values, the common goods, if you like, underpinning political constitutional way of life. And here we have two recent articles by a writer called Andrew Williams from Warwick. And Andrew Williams wrote an article in the OJLS, Taking Values Seriously Towards a Philosophy of EU Law. And the nuts and bolts of Andrew Williams' position looks like very classic normative constitutional tradition, which is you know, what EU needs, he says, it lacks an apparent philosophy capable of stirring the loyalty and interest of the public that might legitimate and support its existence and application. That's what the EU lacks, philosophy. And so what he talks about, or what he argues, is that trying to complete the common market and so on has led the EU to have a very weak normative heritage, for want of a better word. And so what Williams tries to say is that what the EU needs most of all is a theory of justice, a commitment, an ethical commitment to justice. And what we need, and what you need to do, is discover a philosophy of justice. Okay, so Williams's article, written only in 2009, published in 2009, looks like a very classical idea of the constitutional heritage of looking at trying to find a theory of justice capable of providing an ethical or common value for the European Union. Okay, so what's remarkable about it? Well, actually, what I think is very remarkable, in a way, is that the question of justice. What Williams is concerned with is actually the fact that the question of justice is a matter which we have to think about. What is it to have a place for justice? How can we think about a common commitment of justice? Why have we distanced ourselves from asking about justice in the European Union? But what I suggest is that this question of what is justice is not really a matter of constructing a theory or a meta-theory of justice. It's not a case of putting us back into the normative language of meta-constitutionalism, but it's actually, just like Neil Walker's article about or suggestion about what is community, what is justice? What is justice for the European Union, for any political community, for that matter, is a matter that is essential to constitutionalism and is hidden or is concealed by the attempt to then say, let's try and fix it down with a theory. Let's try and reduce it to a theory of justice. In other words, the question of community, the question of justice, is an ongoing and continuous matter for any political community. That is the core of constitutional thinking. And that is what is hidden by constitutionalism's heritage. I have to leave it here, unfortunately. I was going to, in the written version of the paper, I will try and say how actually we do go about trying to reconfigure constitutionalism towards the question of community and the question of justice, not as a meta-theory of those things or as a theory or an epistemology of those issues, but as, if you like, bringing that esoteric problem to the language of constitutionalism, to the way we express and develop the language of constitutionalism. But you'll maybe have to read the paper to find out how I do that, unfortunately. So I think 30 minutes, I've kept to 30 minutes, so thanks very much.
Excellent.